Hello and welcome to Centre Parenting Balance podcast. My name is Katie Walker and I talk all things parenting children with ADHD, autism, PDA and associated mental health conditions. I've professionally worked as a family support worker with children and families. I've completed therapeutic courses with children such as friendship interventions, Lego therapy, emotional regulation interventions and therapeutic story writing. But I am most importantly a mum of three neurodiverse children who have taught me more than my education, training courses, and professional experience put together. Having a daughter who has autism, ADHD, a sleep disorder, OCD, anxiety, and possible dyslexia is my foundation for this podcast. Today, we are going to talk about how we can help our neurodiverse children find their authentic, non-apologetic, confident selves. Now, at age 14 years old and starting year 10 in the home ed world, she has absolutely transformed from a child who constantly compared herself to other girls, had regular panic attacks, ruminated, was bullied, had little self-confidence, and would heavily mask, and then burn out in social situations. Into now a child who is authentically, unapologetically herself. So, how did we get here? Let me share my thinkings with you. Firstly, I believe, and I share this belief regularly with my children, that we can either mask our true selves and suffer discomfort, which is usually later down the line when we're burnt out, losing ourselves, or becoming socially anxious due to masking. Alternatively, we can unmask ourselves now and focus on finding only those who value us, which means you might likely suffer discomfort in the now while you're doing that. But both ways cause discomfort. And the easiest discomfort is to be authentic now rather than suffer with anxiety or burnout or losing yourself later down the line. For teenagers, this is so hard to achieve, what with the peer pressure, unrealistic social media expectations, and general society pressures that they're subject to. For neurodiverse children, I believe it can be even more challenging because they have the added extra sometimes of masking or low self-esteem, low self-confidence, social and communication barriers, anxiety, burnout, school attendance difficulties and behaviour differences that can add a whole new layer in here. And for neurodiverse children, it can be isolating due to all of these complexities as they find it too difficult to navigate and pull away from it. Personally, I have a real problem with the mainstream narrative when it comes to neurodiversity. I've worked in plenty of mainstream schools to learn that it's a constant push of academics. Constant talks of SATs, GCSEs, mock exams, levels, needing certain grades to get into college or onto courses. And it seems that children as young as 8 years old are already suffering low self-worth due to feeling behind academically, not as good as. Or apparently it means you're not clever. So what's the point anyway? The amount of children that I work with in mainstream who I quite often have asked a question to, what do you enjoy? And they respond with academic answers because that's all they know. They may reply with something along the lines of, well, I'm not very good at maths and I really hate English and the art lessons are super boring. So I'm actually not really very good at anything. And I find this heartbreaking to hear. When did we become so busy focusing on mainstream academics that we forget to find what lights our fire? I always say to my children now, whenever they speak about not feeling clever, particularly my younger son who's eight, that's still in the mainstream world and can quite often compare himself to other people, I'll quite often say, how are you measuring clever? I mean, it's a question that I probably say out loud to somebody every single week. Because you can be clever in so many different ways, separate, completely separate to academic subjects or anything that's taught in the mainstream world. You could be really good at training animals, perhaps the pet at home, or really good with your horse riding lessons. Perhaps you're really good at mixing and editing music, or doing these stop start motion videos online. Perhaps you're amazing at following Lego instructions and building Lego. You might be really clever at understanding energy in others and read a room within seconds, picking up all these kind of micro facial expressions and tones that the rest of us don't see. You may be fantastic at board games and really understanding rules. Perhaps you're amazing at swimming or dancing. Or maybe you make the best chocolate chip cookies on the street. It's got nothing to do with academics or mainstream when we talk about clever or we talk about what we enjoy. Surely all our children have something, something that they enjoy, something that they feel they're good at. Truly knowing that they're clever in something is magical. And that's regardless of school or academics. And so a lot of the speak in my house pulls away from the academics, pulls away from what's going on in the classroom, unless my youngest wants to talk about it, of course. We talk about other areas of our lives, which is so much more important, and build their confidence in those areas. I was shared the most incredible story, right? And I really want to read this story to you because I just think it's phenomenal and it kind of sums up what it is I'm trying to say. This is based on a true story, may I add. This is a completely true story right back in the day. One day, Thomas Alva Edison came home from school and handed his mother a note. He said, "My teacher gave me this note and told me to give it to you." His mother opened the note, and as she read it, her eyes filled with tears. She read it out loud to her son. "Your son is a genius. This school is too small for him, and we don't have the right teachers to teach someone so special. Please teach him at home." From that day on, his mother took charge of all of his learning. And years later, after his mother had passed away and Edison had become one of the greatest inventors of all time, he was looking through some old family belongings. And on his desk, inside a picture frame, he found a folded piece of paper. He opened it and read the original note from his teacher. It actually said, "Your son is mentally ill and we cannot allow him to return to school." Edison cried for hours after reading it. Then he wrote in his diary, "Thomas Alva Edison was once a child labelled mentally ill, but because of a brave and loving mother, he grew up to be a genius." What a powerful response his mother had. She could have told him the painful truth, but instead she gave him a message that built him up. She made him believe he was smart and capable, and he believed it so much that he grew up to be one of history's greatest minds. It shows just how much influence a parent's words can have on a child. How incredible is that story? And this is the kind of ethos that I try and create at home, because children just need one person to believe in them and guide them. So, how can we help our neurodiverse child find their authentic, non-apologetic, confident self? Step one to finding one's authentic self is finding their clever thing and constantly validate that for them. Good at making cookies? Make them for the neighbour, show them off. Great at recording music? Record a song and discuss publishing and how you're going to publish it. Fantastic at building Lego? Display it somewhere central where everybody can see. Take a photo and send it to a family or friend. Not great at academics, don't like anything at school, don't worry, don't focus on that. Focus on the positives and changing that talk in the house. Whenever they bring themselves down or compare themselves or think they're not good at something, ask them, how are they measuring clever? How are they measuring clever? Because we can't just measure it in the academic world at mainstream school. That would be crazy. Emphasize what makes them cool, unique, and wonderful as much as you can. For example, you're so amazing at solving murder mysteries. You'd make an amazing detective one day. What cases would you love to solve? You're incredible at teaching the dog new tricks. Have you ever thought about teaching perhaps scent training or some different skills? That Lego set is very cool. Your ability to follow instructions is great. Do you think you could build something for me next time? I'd love to have something made by you. I'd consider myself really lucky if you could do that for me. Allowing open communication for your child to learn about themselves and feel comfortable with who he or she is. It's really important. Perhaps step two would be open communication for peer pressure. Emily will often talk with me about her friends and the decisions or the dramas that they're making or having. And so I use every single one of those conversations as an excuse for a social story and an opportunity for learning. So she might tell me about friends that have started vaping, and I will turn that into a social story. I'm not sure that's a wise choice. Have you seen the dangers? What do you think about it? It's important that when you do these social stories, that they're kind of on even playing ground, meaning the conversations are interesting to your child, the debate is interesting. Every parent would say no to vaping, full stop, but do we actually open a debate about it? Do we actually talk about how, from our children's perspective, it actually makes them feel like they're cool? Okay, let's talk about that. Being curious about what your child feels or how they're perceiving a situation serves as much better communication and conversation. And it also allows them to be authentic and to speak to you and approach you about these things rather than just knowing they're going to get a mum said no. When Emily speaks to me about perhaps a friend that was rude to a teacher, or a friend that had a big row with her mum, or a friend that kissed a boy, or my friend says stays out until 11 o'clock at night, and I think I should be able to stay out at that time too. Everything is a communication, a social story, a debate, and that's okay from both sides. When she says, my friend says I should have a boyfriend or I should wear certain clothes, these are great opportunities for social stories and connection, and I will use them every time. I'm remembering that every time the focus should be on maintaining your child's authentic self. And so I will often say to Emily, how do you feel about that? What would you like to do next? What do you think would be a good move? Have you thought that through? Rather than just parent to child, this is what you should do. It's interesting. We have, I know of a child that is absolutely banned from any social media, right? Any TikTok, any Facebook, any Instagram. And they are like year 11, so nearly 16 or maybe 16 already. And the parents are adamant that's a good decision, and they can't believe that they've managed to pull it off. And this child doesn't have social media. And actually, the reality of it is, this child does have social media. They put the apps on their phone when they leave the house, and then they delete the apps before they come back in the house, so the parents don't know about it. And in my view, that's really dangerous because it puts that child in a very vulnerable state. Because then, now, if anything ever happened on social media that they would need to talk to somebody about, the chances are they're never going to be able to talk to their parents about it because they know they shouldn't have it anyway. And so, this just builds a massive barrier and can create vulnerabilities, actually. Whereas I would much rather be able to talk about and debate things, allow my child to have certain aspects of social media, but to do it safely and to teach them how to do it safely as a team together. I think all the time we're just building conformity. Our children get to a certain age where they would just go and do it anyway, and then they don't have the skills to do this safely because they haven't got an adult's input with it. Step three. Possibly thinking about not encouraging people pleasing. I was brought up to people please, not by my parents, but by society in general, school and such like. And I think it's about time we try and break those generational expectations. No more people pleasing, please. Asking your child, how do you feel about that? Do you want to say yes? It's okay to say no. If saying no feels uncomfortable and you want to say no, let's role play this situation together so that you can feel comfortable saying no to your friends or a member of the family or an adult. Let's role play how we can do this together to make it easier. People pleasing is really interesting because I think if your child is used to people pleasing, that's basically conformity. And in a safe environment, that works okay. Meaning, within the household with you guys. But actually, in a vulnerable environment, out with friends when they're 15 or 16 or even 18 or 19, that's not so safe. So trying not to encourage people pleasing, I think, is really important. It's very similar to masking, in my opinion. And as we know, masking can also create lots of vulnerabilities too, particularly as children get older. And so teaching them not to people please and asking them how they feel about something and why they perhaps don't want to say yes, why they want to say no, exploring that, get curious, because that will help teach your child about themselves, how it is they're feeling, and why they feel those ways. The next step, learning how to set boundaries, learning how to set boundaries with people. I so wish I was taught this when I was younger. Whether that be with siblings in the house, whether it be with you as the adults, can your child set some boundaries that you will follow to teach them that it is safe to set boundaries? It doesn't make them a mean person or a bad person. It's important to set boundaries. And by setting boundaries and allowing them to choose what those boundaries are, that are age appropriate and work within the household, teaches them how to do it later on in life. So when they become, married or when they're having friendship difficulties or in vulnerable situations as they get older or within work, these are all really important skills, learning how to set boundaries, and we are not taught them. In fact, we are taught conformity and people pleasing, which for our neurodiverse children who are very good at masking anyway, that's not great. So teaching children how to set boundaries is really important. Quite often, I will say to Emily, Harry's still a little bit too young, but I would quite often say to Emily, if you could set two boundaries right now, what would they be? Hypothetically, what would they be? And usually, it will be something like, I would make you knock before walking in because I am a nightmare at sometimes just walking in without knocking, and that's a good kick up the backside for me to listen on her bedroom door. Or sometimes it will be something to do with their sibling. And it's really important that we try and follow those boundaries for her. Respect her as a person. Throwing out perfection tendencies. I think this is really important for children that have PDA. I struggle with this with my son. He is 8, autism, ADHD, PDA, and absolutely has this kind of like perfectionism thing going on. He'd draw a picture, but the slightest thing goes wrong, or if somebody says it's good, it rips up, puts it in the bin. So we do have some issues with perfectionism tendencies in this household. And trying to mirror that the world is not perfect is really important. And constantly showing him that life doesn't have to be perfect to be good. So in the example of him ripping up his picture and put it in the bin, I will take it out the bin when he's not looking, uncrumple it and instead of taking it back together, I won't say anything, but I will then stick it on the fridge because I want him to know that I love it. I don't care if he doesn't love it. I love it. It's amazing. And it's small acts like this that over time teach him that actually it doesn't have to be perfect for it to be loved. I quite often will talk at dinner time about the things in my day that have gone wrong and laugh about the fact, being perfect would be boring, right? So I quite often talk about the fact that I forgot to get something from the shop, which then meant I couldn't cook a certain meal and therefore I had to go back to the shop. Or I will talk about oops moments, this happened or that happened. Perhaps I said something to somebody at work and I wasn't sure how they took it, and I was worried about that. And I will often have conversations like that with them so that they know that perfect doesn't exist. Because in their eyes, I'm mum. in their eyes, I know everything, right? And so I want to kind of scupper that for them and say, no, actually, I might be mum, but I don't know everything. I don't know. I'm winging it too. Maybe you can help me, actually. What do you think, Harry? And having that approach really works. I'll often share my mistakes via communication throughout the day just to normalize the fact that everybody makes mistakes all the time. That's normal. That's okay. Another thing we can think about is throwing out other people's opinions. So if my kids ask me if I like something, for example, Emily might come down in a new dress and say, "Do you like this?" I won't answer until she's answered whether she likes it. I'll often say, "Well, do you like it? Do you like my hair like this? Well, do you like it?" Trying to get them to trust their own intuition, their own instincts as to whether they like something or not is really important. If my children ask me if perhaps their friend may like a certain item of clothing and maybe they should then get it, I'll quite often remind them that they don't need to wear the clothing that their friend is wearing. And do they even like it in the first place? That's probably going to cost 40 or £50. So if I gave you 40 or £50, would you want to go and get that hoodie or would you want something different? Would you want a cheaper hoodie and then have some money left over to buy some leggings and some tops and things in Primark also? Which one would you like? And quite often it's the latter one. Quite often when they think about what it is they want, it's not what their friend wants. But of course, if I hadn't have taken the moment to ask them, I hear you, it's a lovely hoodie. But do you really want it? Is that really your priority? Is that absolutely what you want? Sometimes Harry will say to me, "Do you think my teacher will like my colouring? Or do you think my teacher will like my homework?" And I'll often say, "Do you like your colouring? Do you like your homework?" When he does his homework, which isn't very often granted, but I'll often ask him, "Are you happy with how much you've done? Are you happy with your writing? Are you happy with the way you've laid that out? Are you happy with it?" Because that's the most important thing. Quite often, I think society can, especially with teenage girls and maybe boys, can show, particularly on TikTok and Instagram, a certain way of living, the kind of these expectations that should be, that our children nowadays should take on. These big parties or lots and lots of friends and big sleepovers with sort of six or seven or even eight girls there, and then matching pajamas and special fluffy buckets full of sweets, and everything is perfect, perfect, and everybody is happy, happy in it. And I think Emily really struggles with perceiving, seeing that and thinking, well, is that the real world or not the real world? And so quite often we'll have conversations about what's real and what's not real. Emily has quite a small and safe circle of beautifully lovely friends. However, because social media portrays, big groups of girls on days out and beach days and Valentine's days and Halloween days and all of these kind of regular parties, I think she can sometimes feel less than or that she's missing out on some sort of life that she should be living. And I will quite often remind Emily, but also ask Emily, do you really want all of that? Or do you prefer feeling valued by a few people? Actually, Emily really struggles in big groups of children. She has a social and communication disorder for reference and autism and ADHD, and she takes on all of that energy in the group and all of those micro kind of facial expressions and tones and dramas that other people don't see. And so actually, she actually finds big groups of friends really exhausting and can spend 2 days recovering from one social event. And so I'll quite often say to Emily, is that really what you want? And we open the discussion and we look at the pros and cons of it. And actually, we end up finding out that she's quite happier how she is with her small circle of friends. And so we can take away that kind of perfect life that's out there for her, that comparison. We can kind of squish that comparison quite quickly, but it does take time to have these discussions and not telling her what I believe, but listening to her and almost helping her brainstorm it right through to the very end. No different, I guess, to if you went and saw a counsellor. If you went and got a therapy, you would speak about certain situations and things that have happened in your life. And they're not there to tell you what to do or what decisions to make, but they're there to kind of listen, validate your feelings, open up some open-ended questions, but also help you brainstorm your own emotions and the way you feel about things so that you can choose options moving forward that you feel are positive. And so it's no different to what we're doing with our children. But I just think if your child has autism, ADHD, or PDA, we can take on this role of a counsellor in communication 24/7. And that kind of becomes the norm, which is okay because they need that. I think it's really important to enable them to find their own path. Emily wants to dye her hair blonde and then red and then brown. That's okay. She's finding herself. Secretly, I would have loved her to have kept her natural hair. But she's beautiful with all the colours and it really doesn't matter. She's occasionally brought home a friend that perhaps I personally believe to be a bad influence on her behaviour, and I'm not overly clean, but I don't come down on hard on her and tell her my expectations. I'll approach it gently and sensitively. And very soon, Emily realises for herself anyway. If Emily wants to wear outfits that I might cringe at, that's okay. Because in all of these examples, from dyeing her hair to people she hangs around with to people, things that she's wearing, are all examples of her finding herself. How can she find her authentic self if I am so controlling and strict on her that she can only do what it is I want her to do? How can she go and find the friends that she thinks are for her, that fit with her values, if she doesn't go and meet lots of people? And in meeting lots of people, some of those friends aren't going to fit that box, and that's okay. But it's something she has to go through in order to try all those skills, those boundaries, understand her authentic self in order to find her people, right? It's the same with the outfits. Sometimes I think, oh my goodness, like they're so short. The shorts are so short at the moment. I don't know if anyone has teenage girls, but the shorts are very short. And naturally, I would like to say, no, I don't want you to wear those shorts. But she needs to find herself. And so that may come with a phase of wearing these shorts until she finds what she wants to wear. Outfits that she feels comfortable in is more important than me forcing her to wear things that she does not feel comfortable in. It's important as a parent that I enable her to find herself. Which can be a really difficult stage because let's face it, as parents, we just know that the short shorts are not a good vibe. And we know that dyeing blonde hair to a permanent red is a really bad idea because we're never going to get that red out of the hair. And we know what friendships are going to last and ones that won't last when we meet children. But they have to find that out for themselves in order to be authentic. They have to be able to go through those processes themselves, not be handed a particular life by a parent who thinks they know better. And let's be real, we usually do know better, but we're not going to tell that to them because that is a process they have to go through in order to get to this unmasked, authentic version of themselves. They need to better trust themselves, trust their intuitions, you know? Mistakes are important. Dyeing the hair red and they didn't want it red is important. It's an important process to go through. It kind of teaches us that we don't like the feeling of, or that's definitely not what we want, or that's definitely not our authentic selves. And we wouldn't know that without making some mistakes. So I don't helicopter around the top of my child in the hope that they don't make any mistakes. In fact, as long as they're safe mistakes, I'm quite happy for them to make them. And actually, I hope that they do. Because it helps with learning that perfectionism doesn't exist. And what's next from perfectionism, it can lead into OCD. And so for children that have autism or ADHD or PDA, it's really important actually that they learn that mistakes are okay. In fact, we can even laugh about them sometimes, and that's okay, rather than dwelling on them. And it's something I practice so much in my house all the time. It's just part of us now. I tell my children I want them to make mistakes, and I hope that we can figure those mistakes out together because perfection doesn't exist and I wouldn't want it to. But also, those mistakes will help them find themselves quicker. And that's okay. I also try and encourage my children to do things themselves that may show their authentic selves. So, for example, I may ask them to choose their own gifts for their siblings and their friends at Christmas time. I may encourage them to make Christmas hampers with lots of different bits in, perhaps decorate the cards themselves, perhaps even make presents themselves, such as friendship bracelets or making scented candles, or even melting and making chocolate shapes. And this really encourages self-confidence amongst peers and being authentically themselves and sharing themselves. Because part of that present giving, part of that gift giving is thinking about what somebody else might like, but kind of putting their own stamp on it. And it's something I'm a huge fan of. I'm definitely not for going on Amazon and just picking some gifts. I'm definitely for what would you like to create for them? And of course, we only have a very small window of doing this before it becomes not cool. I think girls stay there for a little bit longer than boys, but I think, Emily's now 14, nearly 15, and I think we're sort of heading into the Amazon basket. So, I'm glad I've got many, many years in of her doing this. So that she can share a piece of herself with other people and not feel embarrassed about it. Recently, Emily spent ages making her friend it was her boyfriend, a photo box. So she'd bought this box, and when he took the lid off, there was lots of photos that were hanging from bits of wool. So it was like a mobile in the lid of the box, like a baby mobile, but with all these photos of the two of them together. And in there was a gift that he obviously really liked. But she was sharing her creativity with him. And actually, that made the gift so much more special. And it really boosted her confidence when he opened it, and he absolutely loved it and really boosted her self-esteem way more than putting £20 in a card would have ever done for him and her. So they both got so much from it, and she was able to show her authentic self. And I think for creative children, this can work really well. And I think for non-creative children, this can still work, but you just have to take the lead a little bit with it. But I still think it would be absolutely worth it. So even if you were to make some different shaped chocolates or some chocolate lollies, or Pinterest is great to go and have a little look at different crafts that you can do, and you were to wrap them and hand them out, even if your child was just kind of dipping in and out and maybe helping just a little bit, the benefit comes from when you give it. From when you give it, and that person is like, oh my goodness, this is incredible, this is amazing. That really boosts their self-confidence, their self-esteem. It's incredible. Something I always do, would absolutely recommend it, hands down. So, as you're aware, Emily is home educated, and I would recommend it to anyone. Literally overnight, the need to look the same as other peers with the named coats and the certain handbags and the, Nike trainers, all of that disappeared. And the pretend to act in a certain way disappeared completely. And genuinely, what I see is a huge divide between children that are home educated and the children that are in mainstream in the world of authenticity. And it would seem that home educated children just have the space to grow into who it is they are. And that is the difference, because they're not focused on conformity between Hubbus 8 and, Hubbus 3 every day. And that's not a negative for those children that go to mainstream, but I can't do a podcast on authenticity and not promote the world of home education, because home education is exactly that. The environment is small, it's different. Therefore, the comparisons and the peer pressures will be much less in a home education class of 8 children than it will be in 5 lessons of 32 children each hour. This home education choice has, of course, really helped towards finding Emily's authenticity and who she is. But that's not to say that all these other things in this podcast don't help, even if your child is within mainstream school. My son, my 8-year-old son, is in mainstream school, and I still do these other aspects with him, and I see a huge difference in him. And so, even if your child is in mainstream school, the rest can still happen. Changing that culture at home really helps. So, how do we make our children more authentic and unapologetically confident children? Well, the answer is by lots of little interventions that just become a new way of life. Let's summarize some of the things we've talked about. We've covered so many. We've talked about the discomfort of masking and its risks, and encouraging to unmask as much as possible, and being proud of who we are, reminding them why, if necessary, and providing unmasked environments as much as possible. Find out what your child is amazing at, what they're interested in, and ensure that they feel clever within it and encourage more of it. Try and make it more about them than academic games for GCSE. Yes, we know we've been drummed into, we need math to get into college. But what do you enjoy regardless of that, regardless of mainstream narrative? What do you enjoy? Who are you? And you're not going to find that if you're constantly comparing yourself to the mainstream narrative. Remembering that they just need one person to believe in them, to be their biggest fan ever. And if they're into something really quirky that doesn't quite fit mainstream, believe in them and roll with it. Emphasize what makes them cool and authentic. Opening up that regular communication and offering social stories about peer pressures that are going on around them. Discouraging people pleasing at any cost. Teaching your child how to set safe boundaries, starting off within the home and why it's important, and then following those. Getting rid of those perfection tendencies and sharing those whoops moments that you have too. Normalize that perfect doesn't exist, but also you wouldn't want it to anyway. Throw out other people's opinions and change the language in the house, including yours on yourself. Remember, modelling is always better than telling. Your child will always do what you do, not what you say, particularly as they go into adulthood. Model the behaviours you want to see for themselves. Enable them to explore and find their own path safely, stepping back on that control and realizing that they don't want to listen to what you say. They need to find out for themselves. They need to grow for themselves, and in there should come some safe mistakes. Mistakes are important. Celebrate them. It can teach us what we don't like and what we don't want to do again. And that's exactly what we need if we're going to find our authentic selves. Let them share pieces of themselves when sending other people gifts. And if your child really loses themselves within the mainstream world like mine, then you may think and consider home education as an alternative choice. We have covered so much in today's podcast, lots more ideas for your bucket of resources that maybe you don't feel that you need today, but you may need in the future. Maybe you feel all of them would be too much, but maybe some of them would work really well. They're just for you to add to your bucket of resources for whenever you need. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day today, and I look forward to hearing from you with any questions or comments you may have. Remember, you can always reach me at www.sendparentingbalance.com. Using the Contact Me page, I love to hear from you and I always respond. If you would like any bespoke advice about your child or your family situation, please check out our services page at www.sendparentingbalance.com. I can help with autism and ADHD and PDA behaviours. I can help with ARFID and anxiety and burnout, shutdown, self-harm, sleep disorders, as well as parent well-being. As always, please remember that the advice given on today's podcast does not replace the advice sought by a trained psychologist or medical professional, and it is just for entertainment and educational purposes only. Thank you.